Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at the cybersecurity landscape, specifically for the financial sector in 2024. We've got this really interesting article called 11 Biggest Financial Sector Cybersecurity Threats in 2024. We're going to be kind of pulling out the most important stuff from this so that you can understand what threats are out there, why they should matter to you, and what can be done about them.
It's amazing how we're not just protecting data anymore. It's like we're safeguarding entire financial systems. Kind of feels like a sci-fi movie sometimes.
Yeah, I know, that's a great point. So let's start with something everyone's heard of, ransomware. It's gotten even more dangerous. 65% of financial institutions were hit by ransomware this year. That's up from only 34% just 3 years ago. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of things causing it. Cyber criminals are getting better at what they do, and they're going after financial institutions because they know they can't afford any downtime. Plus, cryptocurrency has made it really easy to collect ransoms without being traced. But the worst part is, even if you pay the ransom, there's no guarantee they'll unlock your data.
So paying might just buy you some time.
Yeah, exactly. And what's even worse is they usually steal your data before locking it up and then threaten to leak it. So it's like a double whammy for financial institutions.
Reputation damage on top of everything else.
Yeah.
So what can financial institutions do to protect themselves? It feels like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure here.
Definitely. You need a really strong defense. Regular updates for your systems. Make sure you have good backups and that you test them often. Invest in some advanced endpoint detection tools. These can help stop ransomware attacks before they spread too far. And for anyone listening, this goes for your personal devices too.
While ransomware is kind of this in-your-face attack, phishing is this sneaky, constant threat. And it still works, even though everyone knows about it. Why is that?
Because it uses something we all have, trust. Cyber criminals are really good at disguising their emails. They can make them look like they're from your bank or a company you know. They're preying on that moment when you're not really thinking too hard. And in finance, things move so fast, we're all extra vulnerable to that.
Yeah, and you can't forget logins for bank accounts and crypto wallets. That stuff is worth a lot on the dark web. So what makes fighting phishing so hard for financial companies?
Well, you've got to worry about both your employees and your customers. You need to train your employees really well, but you also need to educate your customers too. It's about building this culture of security that goes beyond just one company. We're talking multi-factor authentication everywhere, DMRC protocols to stop fake emails, and just always being on guard.
DMRAC, I feel like people talk about that a lot. But for those of us who are really into the tech side of things, can you explain how that works?
Oh yeah, definitely. DMRC is like an email bouncer. It lets the sender of an email, like a bank, tell the email servers what to do if they get an email that doesn't pass their checks, like if it's from a fake domain. It stops those fake emails from even getting to your inbox.
Okay, so that's phishing. But what about attacks that feel like a digital natural disaster? DDoS attacks.
Oh yeah, those are something else. Imagine a huge wave of traffic hitting a bank's website all at once, bringing everything to a standstill. That's a DDoS attack. It's meant to overwhelm systems and cause downtime, and it can cost a lot of money. And with more and more political hacking going on, even small financial institutions are targets.
That attack on the Israeli firm, 798 GBPs, I mean, that's just crazy. If they can get hit like that, what hope do smaller companies have?
It all comes down to being prepared. You need DDoS protection services to act like a shield. They filter out that bad traffic. And you need a plan for what to do if you get attacked. Knowing what to do can make the difference between a small problem and a total disaster.
Okay, so DDoS is like this sudden storm. But what about those quieter threats? APTs, advanced persistent threats.
Those are different. APTs are all about really skilled attackers. Think government hackers or like elite hacking groups. They take their time getting into systems. It's not about quick money. It's about stealing a lot of money or manipulating markets or even spying.
Like that Bangladesh bank heist.
Yeah.
By the Lazarus Group. They planned that for months.
Yeah.
And it did a ton of damage. How can you even protect against something like that?
You have to think differently about security. It's not just about guarding your systems. You have to assume that anyone or any device could be compromised. You have to constantly watch your network, use multi-factor authentication everywhere, and train your staff all the time. You're not building walls, you're creating a culture of vigilance.
It's like you're turning your whole staff into cyber detectives.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And speaking of threats from inside, let's talk about insider threats. It's not always some hacker on the outside. Sometimes the danger is coming from inside the company.
Wait, hold on. We're talking about people who actually work at the bank or financial institution, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of scary. Why is that such a big worry in finance?
Well, think about it. What if an employee is angry? Or what if someone has too much access? Or even just makes an honest mistake? All of that can lead to data leaks or fraud or theft. And in finance, trust is everything. If people lose trust in a financial institution, it can be really bad. It's not just about losing money either. It's about people losing trust in the whole system. When that happens, things can get really shaky.
Yeah, it's like everything starts falling apart. So how can companies protect themselves from these insider threats? It seems like it's a whole different problem than outside hackers.
You still need layers of protection, but there are different kinds of layers. You need to control who has access to what. Like, people should only be able to see information they actually need for their job. And you need to check who has access regularly, especially when people change jobs or leave the company. And you need systems that can spot weird behavior. Like if someone is downloading way more data than usual or logging in at strange hours.
So it's like a whole web of safeguards.
Yeah.
Both technical and just procedural. To catch these things early on, it makes you realize cybersecurity isn't just about technology. It's about understanding how people act too.
Exactly. And that human element is really important when we talk about security debt. It's like that leaky faucet you keep meaning to fix, but then one day it floods your whole kitchen. Except in this case, the kitchen is your entire financial system.
Ignoring a leaky faucet is one thing, but 76% of financial companies have security debt. And half of them haven't even fixed the really bad problems. That's crazy. What's causing all the security debt?
Well, think about it. Financial institutions are always under pressure to do new things, launch new products, keep up with technology. Sometimes security gets put on the back burner. Plus, you've got old systems and third-party apps. It's a mess, and things can slip through the cracks.
You know, we were just talking about insider threats. And it makes me wonder, is there a link between security debt and employees getting frustrated? If you're always dealing with old systems and clunky processes, maybe that makes you resentful.
That's a really good point. It's something companies need to think about. When employees are unhappy, they're more likely to make mistakes or cut corners, and that can cause a whole bunch of new problems.
Okay, so we have to deal with the security debt. But where do you even start?
You gotta start somewhere. Focus on the really bad problems first, the ones that could cause the most damage. Don't be afraid to get help from outside experts, and automate as much as you can. There are tools that can scan your systems for problems and even tell you which ones to fix first.
Speaking of the big picture, let's talk about software supply chain risks. It's like building a house. If one of your suppliers gives you bad bricks, the whole house is in trouble.
Exactly. Financial institutions rely on a ton of different software and services from other companies, and cyber criminals know this. They're going after weaknesses in that software because they know if they can break one piece, they can break the whole system.
The SolarWinds attack was a huge wake-up call. It showed that a bad software update can get into tons of companies, including financial ones. With so many different pieces of software, how can you even keep track?
It all starts with doing your homework. You need to really check out your vendors. What are their security practices like?
Trust but verify, right?
Exactly. And don't stop after the initial check. You need to keep an eye on your software supply chain all the time. Stay up to date on any problems, patch your systems quickly, and make sure vendors are doing the same.
Okay, so we've talked about ransomware phishing, DDoS APTs, insider threats, security debt, and software supply chain risks. That's a lot. Let's switch gears for a bit and talk about something that's maybe a little less well-known. Cryptojacking.
You know how annoying it is when your computer gets slow all of a sudden? Well, imagine someone secretly using your computer to mine cryptocurrency. That's basically cryptojacking.
Hold on. So they're stealing my computer power, AMD, making my electricity bill go up. That's sneaky.
Yeah.
But how big of a problem is this, really?
It's bigger than a lot of people realize, and it's getting worse. In 2023, there were almost 700% more attacks worldwide.
700%? That's like, I don't even know how to describe that much. So what can companies do to fight back against these cryptojackers?
Think of it like protecting your house. You need strong locks on the doors. That's your secure cloud environments. You need to keep an eye on who's coming and going. That's monitoring for any weird activity. And you need to teach your family not to let strangers in. That's training your employees about phishing and bad downloads.
So it's that layered approach again. But with cryptojacking, education seems even more important because it often relies on people clicking on bad links or downloading bad files.
That's right. You can have the best security software in the world, but if someone makes a mistake, it can all be for nothing.
Okay, let's talk about something a little more futuristic. Quantum computing. Should we be worried about this now, or is it more of a problem for the future?
It's a bit of both. Quantum computers are still pretty new, but they could potentially break the encryption we use today. Imagine a world where all your financial transactions and all your personal data could be easily decoded.
Okay, that's a scary thought. But you said it's not an immediate threat, so when do we need to start panicking?
Panicking never helps, but we do need to start preparing now. Think of it like a race. We need to come up with new encryption methods that can resist quantum computers before those computers get powerful enough to break the encryption we use now.
So it's about being proactive, thinking ahead, and finding solutions before it's too late.
Exactly. And it requires everyone to work together. Governments, industry leaders, researchers, we all need to be on the same page.
Okay, so quantum computing is a bit out there. Let's talk about something that's already affecting cybersecurity today. Artificial intelligence.
Ah, AI. It's a double-edged sword. It can be a powerful tool for defense, but it can also be used by cybercriminals.
Like AI-powered phishing scams that can trick anyone.
You're not far off. We're already seeing AI being used to create really convincing phishing emails and to make fake videos and to spread malware. It's like they're giving their attacks superpowers.
It feels like a digital arms race. The attackers are using AI to get better, and the defenders need to use AI to keep up.
Exactly. We need to fight fire with fire. That means using AI-powered systems to detect threats. These systems can analyze tons of data and spot patterns and anomalies that humans might miss.
It's like giving your security team superhuman abilities.
Right. AI can also help automate incident response, so your security team can focus on the really complex stuff.
So AI is both the problem and the solution.
Exactly. It all depends on who's using it. And that brings us to something that can be a bit of a headache. Regulations. The financial industry has a lot of rules, and for good reason. But trying to keep up with all the cybersecurity regulations can be a full-time job.
Yeah, regulations can feel really overwhelming. But why are cybersecurity regulations so important for financial companies?
Well, think about it. Financial institutions have a lot of sensitive data. Our money, our personal information, everything. Regulations are there to protect us and to make sure the financial system is stable and to prevent fraud and abuse.
Okay, so they're there for a reason. But there are so many different regulations. Where do you even start?
One of the big ones that's raising the bar for cybersecurity and finance is DORA, the Digital Operational Resilience Act. It's from the EU. It covers pretty much everything. Risk management, incident reporting, testing, information sharing.
So DORA is setting a new standard. What does that mean for financial companies that operate in multiple countries? Do they need to follow the rules in every single country?
It's getting more and more complicated. Companies need to understand the regulations in every country they do business in and make sure their cybersecurity practices meet those regulations.
It sounds like following all the rules is a big challenge for financial institutions. Is there any way to make it easier?
Well, one way is to use a framework that aligns with multiple regulations. That way you're not starting from scratch every time you go to a new country.
So it's about finding those core principles that apply everywhere.
Exactly. And don't forget, compliance isn't just about checking boxes. It's about building a culture of cybersecurity throughout the company.
Right. It's about making security everyone's responsibility.
Absolutely. We've covered a lot in this deep dive, but before we talk about solutions in part three, I want to emphasize one thing.
Okay, go for it.
Cybersecurity isn't just about technology. It's about people, processes, and culture. It's about being able to bounce back from problems, being ready for the unexpected, and always adapting to the changing threats.
Well said. It's a good reminder that cybersecurity is a journey, not a destination.
All right, so welcome back. We've spent the last two parts of this deep dive looking at the scary side of cybersecurity for finance. The threats, the vulnerabilities, what could happen if things go wrong. Now let's shift gears and talk about what we can do about it.
Okay, enough doom and gloom. Let's get practical. After everything we've talked about, what can financial institutions actually do to protect themselves and their customers? Where do they even start?
It's easy to get overwhelmed, but you got to tackle this strategically, one step at a time. The first thing is, there's no magic solution. Cybersecurity isn't something you just buy and install. It's a process, something you have to commit to.
Right. It's about making security part of the company's culture. But how do you actually start doing that? What are the basics of good cybersecurity?
One of the most important things is having a good risk management framework. And I don't mean just going through the motions. You need to really understand what threats are out there specifically for you. What are your most important assets? Where are your weak points? What could happen if you get attacked? And not just financially, but to your reputation too. Once you know what the risks are, you can start figuring out how to deal with them.
So it's like a custom threat assessment.
Yeah.
For each company. But things are changing all the time, right? How do you keep up?
Risk management has to be an ongoing thing. You need to check your assessments regularly and update them. Stay informed about new threats. And be ready to change your strategies when you need to.
Okay, so risk management is the foundation. What else is important? I know we talked about access controls before. Can you talk more about those?
Yeah, definitely. Think of access controls like the security guards for your most important systems. You want to make sure only the right people can get in. And even then, they should only be able to see what they absolutely need for their job. It's called the principle of least privilege.
So even if someone does get into an account, they can't do that much damage. It's like limiting the risk.
Exactly. And it's not just about setting up permissions and forgetting about it. You need to check those permissions regularly, especially when people change jobs or leave the company.
Okay, we've got risk management and we've got access controls. What about the actual technical stuff, like firewalls and intrusion detection systems?
Oh, those are super important. Think of them as the walls and the moat around your digital castle. You need multiple layers of defense, starting with a strong firewall that keeps the bad guys out of your network. Intrusion detection systems are like the guards on the wall. They watch for anything suspicious and let you know if something's wrong. And of course, you got to keep those systems updated. Patches and updates are like your armor against the newest threats.
Speaking of armor, what about antivirus software? Is that still important these days?
Absolutely. It might not stop everything, but antivirus is still important for protecting against known threats like malware and viruses. It's like basic hygiene, washing your hands to stop germs. You wouldn't skip washing your hands.
Good point. So it's about having a bunch of different defenses.
Right.
Using different tools and technologies to create a really strong system.
Exactly. It's not about having one magic solution. It's about having layers of defense that are hard for attackers to get through.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about technology, but what about people? We all know that people can be the weakest link in the security chain.
Yeah, that's true. You can have the best tech in the world. But if your employees don't know what they're doing, it won't help. That's why security awareness training is so important. You need to teach your employees about the threats out there, how attackers work, and how they can help protect the company.
Like training your employees to be cyber detectives. Always looking for anything suspicious.
Exactly. Make the training fun. Use real-world examples. Keep reminding people about security. The more your employees know, the less likely they are to fall for scams or make mistakes.
It's about making everyone feel like they're part of the solution.
Now let's talk about something that nobody wants to think about, but something every company needs to be ready for: incident response. What happens when an attacker gets through your defenses?
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, right?
Exactly. That's why you need a plan. A good incident response plan isn't just about putting out fires. It's about containing the damage, recovering quickly, and learning from what happened. It's your emergency plan for the digital world.
Like a fire drill for cyber attacks. Everyone needs to know what to do when the alarm goes off.
Exactly. Your plan should have clear roles and responsibilities, how you're going to communicate, steps to contain the attack and get rid of it, and procedures for getting your data and systems back online. And just like a fire drill, you need to practice regularly.
We talked earlier about how connected everything is and how financial institutions rely on so many other companies.
Yeah.
How does that affect incident response?
That's really important. You need to know who to contact at your vendors, how to coordinate with them, and what information to share if there's a breach. You need to have clear communication channels and procedures in place.
So it's about expanding your incident response plan to include all your partners and vendors.
Exactly. A security incident at one of your vendors can quickly become your problem too.
Okay, we've covered a lot here. It's clear that good cybersecurity takes a lot of work. It's about technology, people, processes, and relationships with other companies. But how can companies stay ahead of the curve when the threats are always changing?
Information. You need to stay up to date on the latest threats, vulnerabilities, and attack methods. Read industry publications, go to security conferences, subscribe to threat intelligence feeds.
And listen to podcasts.
Exactly. Things are changing all the time, so you need to keep learning. Cybersecurity isn't a one-time thing. It's a constant process of adapting and improving.
It sounds like cybersecurity is as much about mindset as it is about technology. Mm-hmm. You need to be vigilant, proactive, and always willing to learn and change.
You got it. It's about creating a culture of security where everyone in the company understands how important it is to protect information and everyone takes responsibility for keeping things secure.
That's a great point to end on. We've talked about a lot in this deep dive, from the biggest cyber threats to the things financial institutions can do to protect themselves. We hope you found this helpful. Remember, cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility. Stay safe out there.